fight with Carl.
It's kind of one of those things. It's like a duck. You know, you see a duck in the water, right? The duck looks like it's cool, but the duck's freaking working hard under the water. Wow, working hard. That's how our place is. We look cool, but we're working hard.
Live stream.
Do it live. All right, we are recording here. Dr. Rich, I'm going to call you Dr. Rich because, to be honest, I do not know how to pronounce your last name.
It's two English words, man. Severin in. Don't call him Dr. Rich. My ex-girlfriend called me Dr. Rich. So.
Okay. All right.
She was cool though. But yeah.
So we got Jared here. Tyler's there. Tracy's here. We're all live from our quarantine sections. Are you in Chicago currently right now?
Yeah, man. I can't really see the lake. It's dark out right now. But yeah, right on the lake shore in Chicago.
Beautiful. And you come down to our neck of the woods every so often, down to Waco for teaching, correct?
Yeah, at Baylor University. So a little bit of a background about me. So I grew up in Philadelphia, went to the University of Miami for physical therapy school. And then did a residency in Wisconsin, residency in Chicago at UIC. So the first one was cardiopulm, second one was orthopedics, but kind of the focus of doing research. And now I'm doing my PhD here at UIC, and I've been teaching in the PT program here since 2014. During that time, I got asked to help start the program itself, or help develop the cardiopulmonary curriculum at South College, and kind of there for their CAPD stuff to a degree. And then was hired as a faculty member at Baylor University, which is a hybrid program. So we come out of Dallas. Now we're going to be spending more of our time down in Waco. We have our new facilities, which just opened up. We had our first full lab there. It was pretty awesome. So Waco's a cool town, man. Like, it doesn't get a lot of, getting more and more of Chip and Joanna.
Yeah.
But it's a cool place, man. They got some pretty good little restaurants there, a couple good breweries down there, Southern Roots, big fan of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. My first ever student was a Baylor EIM student. So shout out. Yeah, excellent experience. Great, phenomenal student. So
good, man.
I totally recommend that program.
Yeah, it's a strong program. I've been fortunate to be, kind of a part of two excellent programs, I put a tweet about this. Thinking back, especially with some of the things that have gone on recently with this COVID virus and chaos is where you see leaders kind of either step up and really show who they are, or they crumble. And they show you who they really are, right? So I've been fortunate that the leadership here at UIC has been strong and has made the right decision and worked together. And the same thing at Baylor, leading by example, by being people who've been teaching in the online space and willing to come and talk to people, share resources. I just gave another webinar with the geriatric section, which is 30 minutes before this podcast. Yes. Kendra Gagnon has been on there. She's been helping out. Mike Walker, our program director. It's just been awesome to see. So, yeah.
So much innovation and creativity on display right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And for me, like I said, as a newer academic, being around just great leadership and great role models, that's so good. So important, man.
Were you always drawn to academia?
Maybe to a certain degree. Like I grew up, my mother was a teacher. Actually, a lot of people in my family members were teachers. That's not true. Actually my first job in undergrad was working in a plant pathology lab, at Penn State. My aunt had been on faculty there since the late 70s, early 80s. But she was more of a researcher, not so much she wasn't a PhD trained, she was master's trained, but did pretty high level science. And I've always been interested in science and research, and whether it was going to be in PT, I didn't really know even what a PT was until my junior year of college, which is wild. Like, I played sports in college and played sports through high school. I was, never saw a PT. We can talk
lucky
about that later on as well. Yeah, well, no, I had injuries too. So speaks to a few things. We need to do a little bit better in the healthcare system's profession. Fortunately, I did. And I knew that, I've always enjoyed teaching, at various different levels. And I felt, that it would be a good fit for me and some of my interests and research as well. So, Yeah. I mean, I always throw out, I'd be doing something in science, the sciences. And, you know, I'd be lying to say if I was 30 years ago as a young kid, did I think I'd be doing exactly what I'm doing now? No, but I, you know, similar, right? So.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, you're definitely somebody I look up to in that in academia and clinical practice and just not being afraid to call out BS.
A couple of comments from that, man. Like, that to me is still kind of wild because I'm still pretty new at this, man. Like, I graduated PT school in 2013. It was funny. I just had a conversation with one of my early mentors at Miami, Merrill Cohen, and she, other people mentioned, so like, it's, you know, what you've done or what I've done in the past 7 years since graduating has been, I guess, uncharacteristic, but I don't know, man. It's just wild for me to be even considered as a leader by other people or people, someone looks up to, because I'm, you know, I still look up to people. So it's like, you know, in terms of calling stuff out, I've always been, people, you know, I stick to my guns and not afraid, call things out. It goes back to as a little kid. Just, you know, if I feel strongly about something, I'm going to share my opinion, and we can agree to disagree. We can agree, we can disagree, but I'm going to say it, you know, silence tells nothing. So.
That's right, man. And speaking of a lot of agreement and disagreement there, we're kind of in a unique time right now. Some people are calling it an unprecedented time with COVID. So how's that affecting your quality of life and your daily practice right now? Were you clinically treating at a hospital prior to this too?
Yeah. So only a real thing for me, and you know, I helped create or co-create a clinical model for bariatric physical therapy at UIC, which is a little bit of a maybe like forgotten thing when people always like, oh, you're just a, you know, you don't know the issues and the trenches of clinical practice. Like, I still treat patients, man. I don't know what people, like, I don't know where this, like, rumor came out. But, yeah, I still treat patients in the clinic model I helped create, and which ties into my research, so, which is nice. We're a non-essential part of healthcare. I mean, as important as I think our clinic is, like, we are canceling cardiac and, you know, oncological surgery, cancer surgery at, you know, our hospital system, like, we should be closed too. So again, our leadership made a decision early on that, you know, unless it's like a post-operative case that we know we really probably need to see, and we have procedures in place, we have isolation rooms, and we're a hospital system. We're not a standalone clinic like, you know, a lot of practices out there. We have ways to kind of mitigate some of the stuff. And we have, like, you know, in our clinic, we actually have physicians, cardiologists and stuff, like, in our facility that are hired within our department, but whole separate thing. So that's affected that. Like, I'm going to be out of clinic for the next couple weeks because of this. But in terms of my research, that's been shut down right now, all human research.
No.
Yeah, it kind of stinks because we had someone who just enrolled into our protocol on Saturday, and we were getting stuff rolling. But, you know, we got to, you know, again, like, if we're shutting down, like, major cardiac surgeries and stuff like that off campus, like, probably important for us to shut down human research too, right? So
I'm sorry.
And at an R1 school, that's not an easy decision to make, right? So, but sometimes, and that's where leadership steps in, we got to make these tough decisions, right? It's the best interest of everybody. The good thing is, though, like, it's given me some free time to you know, to help and connect with other people around the country, to get them, because there's a lot of anxiety, even in, you know, just in fear from students, fear from academics, because, you know, we're at UIC, we are fully online until the end of the semester, like, and Baylor, obviously, we teach in a hybrid model, so we weren't affected as much as other programs, especially with some of the timing that we have of our curriculum. So for me, I mean, not much change besides, like, I'm not coming into the lab, and I'm teaching from home, you know, full time now, instead of, you know, some at in person at UIC and some online at Baylor. Yeah, it's a wild time, man. Like, it's interesting too, because if you look at some of the conversations about hybrid education,
yeah,
4 or 5 years ago, people didn't think too highly of it, and now everyone wants to do it, right? Because we have to.
That's right.
shows you sometimes that being a little bit forward thinking and being a little bit creative about how we approach education or anything is can be beneficial, because you know right now we have teams of people who've been doing this for 5 years who are well equipped to kind of guide everyone along through these crises, and showing that yeah, it might not be a bad idea to start thinking about hybrid education. Because let me tell you this, man, like this is not going to be the last pandemic we see. This is not going to be the last one for as we're at a tipping point.
This is the warm up, right?
Yeah, and we're going to see a lot more of these, and we better be prepared to manage them.
How would you grade our preparedness on this one?
Not great. Not great. I don't know if you guys follow the Joe Rogan podcast. They had a great public health, yeah, and that was health of our nation. We've got a very obese population. We have an active population. And what causes often these infections to become serious are in patients with these who aren't particularly healthy from the start. So it's and then the health literacy issues, right? People like not understanding like the actual importance of doing the social isolation, like understanding the flattening of the curve, right? That you know, even though you might not have symptoms, even though you're probably going to be okay, you can be a vector for yeah. disease for other people who might be susceptible. So it's speaking to a lot of big problems, and as well as like we've been fortunate to be able to kind of chuck along as a society with these things. But you know, when it's very, you know, when a single virus came through, like we could face some dire consequences. So we could have faced the 20% unemployment, right? If like we didn't have any response, right? So it's, yeah, I think the people on the front lines of care have done an excellent job. But hopefully we learn from the situation and build from here, because this is not the last one that's going to happen.
And I think we're all in unique areas of practice here. I know Trace at the VA, he can speak to the things that he's seen now with them implementing screens and everything now, right?
Yeah, they're screening all employees, and they started checking temperatures and stuff today. And that's each VA is a little bit different on how they handle it. But ours, they're trying to figure out how to manage the situation, because it's just now popping up in like Austin, Waco, Dallas, kind of getting close to home. So now it's reacting a little bit. I kind of wish we were a little bit further ahead of the curve, because you've got some VAs in like Houston, they're pretty much going to only essential personnel. Pittsburgh, I think, was one that responded pretty quick. Seattle's kind of having to respond with, you know, it's trying to figure out how essential we are. So,
and the thing is, I think people also have like taken like exception to this term, like non-essential. Like non-essential doesn't mean like not important, which I think a lot of PTs are like are conflating, right?
Yeah,
like, definitely. Priorities though, right? Like, you know,
we have big confidence issues to begin with, so when you go around saying we're not essential, man, it's a pretty big ego hit.
It's definitely something I find interesting. We like took this exception to, essential or not essential. It's like, you know, again, if we're shutting down cardiac surgeries, right, we're shutting down cancer surgeries, bariatric surgery, which is what I work in. We're not doing those right now for at least a couple of weeks. You know, baby PT could be.
That's like in the VA system, I'd say maybe less than 10% of the cases that I see are people that have had pain for less than 6 months. So like, what's 4 to 6 more weeks? Like,
I wanted to make a post about this because I had the same exact thought. I didn't want to say it because, like, again, we're kind of in a chaotic situation. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's not an ideal thing, obviously, that, you know, patients aren't coming to us super early, right, in the pipeline for care. But, like, you know, they aren't. Like, I have patients that come even through bariatrics. I have this preoperative model we see. And anyone can speak to this, like, you know, have you ever seen a PT before? No. All right. How long have you been dealing with like pain or these issues? Oh, like 5 years. Mm-hmm. Right. So like they've been surviving for 5 years. Right. And you know, we're getting outraged that they can't, we can kind of a little bit divergent to reality. Yeah,
that's like for me, I know you, and you're probably a lot better person to speak on this than me, but like outside of an acute stroke, like I don't know what really needs PT right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure there are other cases, but
even acute low back pain, like one, recommendations for acute low back pain is what? Kind of guidance, reassurance, return to activity, self-limiting in six to eight weeks for 80% of the population. Mm-hmm. Like, what we should be doing for even the most acute things that we see involves like waiting a little bit. So I absolutely agree. The only time I'd see that, yeah, maybe it's important to at least have them a face-to-face to some degree is like a post-operative case, or like you mentioned, acute stroke. That's where things get a little bit, you know, we may have to look at things. But yeah, like patients are already not coming to us super early. And yeah, I wish they would, like, but they don't. And we seem to be doing okay with that, I think, and still make improvements. Those patients who come to us later still get better, right? So like pushing things back 2 weeks, like what are we up in arms about? Obviously there's a financial ramification. That's where I think a lot of this is coming from. So I think a lot of this stuff is veiled talk. It's like concern about non-essential care is veiled talk for like, my business is going to tank. And I mean, that's a reality too. Yeah.
And I think Tyler's in an interesting scenario too, because he's outpatient orthopedic right now. And last time I checked, he's still seeing a lot of patients down there, right?
Yeah. So last time we checked was that Tuesday night or something, I think we talked. Yeah. Most of those people canceled. We're at like a 50% cancellation rate. I think I've seen 11. I saw 8 today. And then I have something like 13 on the books tomorrow. What's really fascinating is the amount of initial evals that are showing up. I'm trying to just give them homework and sending them on their way. But every time I get on and I'd love to hear everyone's opinion about this. Every time I get on Reddit and I hear people talking about morals and ethics right now, it weighs pretty heavily on my heart, thinking about going to work tomorrow or maybe in 2 months from now, the clinic having to shut down because there is nobody. But I won't rant about that too much, but that's kind of my situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Like I empathize with business owners, like clinic owners, because like, you know, it's funny, people are like, oh, well, clinics should have like be able to float their clinic without drawing profit for 3 months. And I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? It's got spoken for someone who doesn't like probably does never operate and own their clinic. Like most businesses, if they did not have steady revenue for 3 months would shut down. Like no one has that on hand unless you're like a large, even large corporations, right, face these problems. So a mom and pop shop, you know, that's tough, right? So it's going to involve, we're going to have some involvement from the federal government, state governments to help support local businesses, because if those tank, right, you know, and it's not just PT, it's service industry, right, are crippled right now, right? Bars, restaurants, all these different things. Still worse. And so we're gonna be other ramifications. We don't have, you know, intervention from the government. But yeah, it's created some unique ethical decisions and situations that I don't think we've ever really been faced with, because we haven't had something like this in our country in like 100 years, right? Like a major pandemic, like was it the Spanish flu, right? Yeah. 1980. So it's, you know, again, I think sometimes with the whole like time-based amnesia, when we go away from things, we forget it, you know, and now we're even more interconnected as a society, that again, this stuff's going to happen more, and we need to start thinking about these things. We're going to get through this, like the dawn is going to come eventually, but we need to start thinking about these things, because it's tough to make these ethical decisions on the fly, right? If it's something we've never really been exposed to before.
Yep.
So how far out do you think we are before kind of you can kind of see the light again? We're still definitely, I think, staring into some dark times. What do you think our timeline is here before we get some like clear skies again?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to profess to be a public health expert or epidemiologist, but you know, I've listened to quite a few on there, and we don't really know, man. You know, a lot of it comes down to detection and what we're doing in terms of trying to keep people away. You know, the biggest concern, which I think people like lose sight of, it's not so much the mortality rate from this condition that's concerning. It's like the occupancy of resources that we just don't have. Like we don't have them. you know, we're working on a paper to talk about some of these things of our group here. But, you know, there's been published data that says the United States healthcare system could accommodate a surge at best 50,000 cases needing ICU and mechanical ventilation beyond what we typically have. And that's with good planning ahead of time. Acknowledging that. So some people say that, you know, we're in for this for a few months with this kind of still spreading through until people build immunity. But yeah, I don't really know. I know for certain we are not, this is not going to be over shortly. It's going to take a few weeks, maybe months until we get to dawn, but there will be a dawn. Like we will get through this though. So.
Awesome. Yeah, a lot of people need that positivity right now, that optimism, definitely.
Hey, man, what's the whole 311 thing, right? Stay positive, right, and love your life.
Like, what a segue.
Things could always be worse, right? So,
yeah. Hey, I need some 311 education right now because we Instagram stalked you, you know, a little bit, as we do most of our guests, and Tyler was freaking out over a post. I'm gonna just let him take away, you know, he can get the next few questions because I need some serious education on this ban that apparently I glossed over in the 90s, 2000s.
Well, both, but yeah.
So who's this 311? Who are these guys? Who are these bros?
311. So it's a ban that's been around since the late 80s, they claim 1989, but I think it started in like 1988. But they really kind of came on board in the early 90s, like with the vocalist S.A. Martinez, who was like does a little bit of the rap kind of flair to some of their songs. So 311 is a band that's based in, originated from Omaha, Nebraska, which is like surprising because people don't think like Omaha, Nebraska and like the style of music they put out. And they're based now in California. But they are an alternative rock band that has a little bit of ska mix, a little bit of like funk, a little bit
ska in Nebraska,
a little bit of rap. Yeah, man, dude, it was the '90s. Like there was ska everywhere. Like that's peak ska era. Because you had Pepper and all that stuff like that, right? Like late '90s.
Yeah.
V Love, you know, all those guys. But Real Big Fish, right? There's in the '90s too, but. Yeah, they put out a few big hits that, like, I think people, like, know. Like, actually, I was playing a little bit of this 311 day. I had lecture at Baylor, and I started playing music at the beginning of class, and I played a song called Beautiful Disaster by them. It's one of my favorite songs.
Okay.
And people were like, who is this? I've heard this song, but I don't know who this band is. I'm like, that's 311, man. You probably heard them. But yeah, they've been around for a while. They are probably, so I grew up listening to like soft rock. My mom listened to, so I grew up in like Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi is not soft rock, but, you know, Tina Turner, Whitney Houston, stuff like that. And, played some classical. And the first real like rock band I ever listened to was 311. And that really kind of opened my eyes to like a whole other area of music. And yeah, they've held a special place in my heart for a long time, like since I was like 8 years
old. So, there you go.
That's Tyler, nice.
Yeah. Hook me up with some jams, Tyler. Like, what are y'all bumping? What album should I go check out right now?
I'd actually say their newer stuff isn't like, I would say, like, they've had an evolution of their style of music. I mean, Tyler would probably agree, like, what they played in the early 90s and then what they had in the late, early 2000s, what they have now, completely different sound. Same exact band members too, which is wild. They've been together for like 30 years. Like it's ridiculous. It's a little bit of rock like earlier on, but I think their best album personally, is probably their Blue album, followed by Transistor. Those are probably, I think, their two best albums.
Okay,
solid choices. Letting the viewers know out there, those are two quality albums right there to go listen to. They have a lot of albums. Is he mentioned it initially? Is they're really positive people, and they're not just positive about talking about ignoring the bad things in life. Like they fully acknowledge that and like their shortcomings and kind of speak on moving forward from that. So it might be a good thing to
absolutely. A song with Jupiter, right? It's probably
Jupiter's a stellar song. How many times have you seen them? You ever seen them live?
You know, I've seen live a few times now. It's actually interesting. So, without throwing my mom under the bus, but I was forbid. So I grew up a pretty straight edge childhood, man. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, man.
But my mom like forbade us. It's my older brother and I from going to concerts as kids. We live in Philadelphia. There were concerts that came through there all the time, and despite the fact that I went to high school in North Philadelphia, it's a school called the Central High School, excellent school. I go through some pretty rough areas to get to school every single day since I was like 14 years old.
Yeah.
The wrestler in high school, I could take care of myself if something went down. And it was like not allowed to go to college. And, 311 never came to Penn State. I was, too broke to go see them elsewhere. So the first time I saw them was in 2014 after I finished residency, or during residency in Wisconsin. I saw them at the Wisconsin State Fair. And now I've seen them pretty much anytime they come to Chicago, I'll go see them. So I've seen them four times now. So
yeah, they tour a decent amount. Speaking of seeing them live, have you ever thought about going on the 311 cruise?
Well, I don't know about now, man. I don't know. I heard it's awesome though, but cruises are pretty freaking dope. Like I went on one with our family on a Disney cruise. My mom called into the radio and won one, which is wild. My mom didn't believe anything self-professed by her. And it's awesome time, but I don't know, man. After this COVID scare, I may pass on the cruises for a little bit. So
yeah, I don't feel like going on a boat right now.
There's a conference I'm trying to go to in Europe in September, the European Respiratory Society, that I'm hoping is still going on. Because they've canceled a lot of major scientific conferences, and I'm hoping that I can book my flights kind of now. They're going to be super cheap, right? So
it's not in Italy, right? Hopefully not.
No, it's in Vienna. It's in Austria.
I got to go catch up on some 311. Trace, did you listen to that band before?
I did not know who that was.
Well, all right, man. So
you put a question in the thing. Not a clue.
Yeah, check them out, man. You've probably heard songs by them. They've had songs in a lot of different movies and even some commercials and even some video games.
And say, if it's been on a Tony Hawk Pro Skater, probably heard of it, or a Madden, any of the bigger video games in the 90s, I probably heard it. But if it wasn't country, I really didn't listen to it growing up. So
I don't think they've ever written any Madden songs, Trace. I don't know.
I'll look into it. I'll have to see.
They're good. You'll like them. There's really not much to not like about them. They're super positive. Their music is good. It's catchy. They're one of the few bands that I can say there's a couple out there, but they in particular that you can play their album from the beginning to the end, and it's just it just flows perfectly. They have a great, great, great lyrical style. And for people who are music, I don't know, savvy is the word.
Yeah.
The technical side of their music is actually really, really nice too. They're just a good band. They're a solid band.
Is that the style of music that you're jamming when you're in the thick of it, in the grind, typing, conducting the research?
I go through phases, man. So if I'm about to go to do some data analysis, I'll listen to some pretty Autumn Artists, stuff like that. Kind of get myself pumped up. Maybe some Disturbed, some Stained, stuff like that. And if I'm doing writing, which I'm probably gonna do a little bit after our podcast, I'll listen to meditation hymns, to kind of get my mind. I have nothing with lyrics, just stuff to kind of keep my mind.
So you'll go right from Disturbed to meditation hymns.
Yeah. Awesome. But I don't know, man. It just works for me. I typically try to write and do stuff in silence, but if I'm gonna have music, if I'm writing late, I'll do a little bit of maybe some synth wave, or at least there's meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's I studied to the Bollywood hits because I can't study the lyrics. But what? Give me some Hindi music. That's been my study music.
Wow.
Yeah, same. I'll listen to another. I'll listen to is Bossa Nova, which is a Brazilian style of jazz blues music, and it's in Portuguese. I don't speak. I should speak more Portuguese than the other Brazilians that I work with. But yeah, I don't know what they're saying, so it's easy for me to not get distracted from hearing them.
Yeah, man. Have you been to every country by now with all your traveling?
Not really, man. I have traveled quite a bit. I've been in the most states. I think I've been to like 40, 50 states. But I've been to quite a few countries multiple times. Okay. So I've been to Kenya. I did a seminar down there in 2018, which is a wild story. Awesome story. And then I've been to England, lived in England for a little bit while I was an undergrad. In Brighton for a study abroad programs 12 years ago. And then Wales, Ireland. And I played, when I played rugby, we played a few teams over in England while we were in college. And then I've been to Nicaragua, Panama. And my dad's from the West Indies, so I've been to the Caribbean a bunch of times. Interesting enough, all this travel, I've never been to Canada. I have never been to Mexico. Like, I've been to Africa.
Yeah.
I've literally been to Africa for 2 weeks, but I haven't made it across the border, northern or southern. And I've been close. Like, I've been in Washington. I've been, like, upstate New York. I grew up in Pennsylvania. Like, I live near the Canadian border.
Been to Texas.
But, yeah, man, I've been in Air. I mean, all along there. I've been in San Diego a bunch of times. Never made it to Mexico, so.
Yeah, I think Africa is way more exciting than Canada.
Definitely. Africa was pretty cool, man. Like, I'm not gonna lie, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And what were you doing over there again?
Yeah, so I was invited, and I just kind of learned about this. So I had a colleague in 2017 who had gone over to do a seminar with the Jackson Clinics, which is an organization over there that trains PTs to, like, do different things. A lot of manual therapy stuff. And I connected with a guy named Martin. He's a PT over there, runs the Physio Tales. You might have heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's awesome, dude. Martin's an awesome guy. But he reached out to me and said, hey, like, we need some help for cardiopulmonary education. I'll be there. Like, I mean, one, going to Africa would be awesome. And two, like, this, it's good service. So got over there. I'm thinking that this is going to just be through Jackson Clinics. And I was surprised if, like, a lot of the emails my colleague had gotten, like, I didn't get. And there was just things seemed a little bit, like, thrown together at the last minute. I'm like, you guys have been doing this for years. So I find out, like, kind of like, as I land in Nairobi and meet with, like, the coordinator, John Okia, apparently I was not through Jackson Clinics. Like, I was the first, apparently. They've had international consultants there using these, like, organizations, Jackson Clinics, stuff like that. I was apparently the first direct invite, like, consultant for the physiotherapy department at the Nairobi Hospital. The Nairobi Hospital is the leading hospital in all of Eastern and Central Africa, certainly in Kenya. And, like, this is the hospital where, like, dignitaries in Kenya and Ethiopia go to for their medical care. Like, their ICU, it's, like, beautiful. So I was brought over to help kind of get them prepared to start a cardiac and pulmonary rehab program. So it's training PTs, nurses, some physicians, basically a crash course, an assessment, programming. Where that this was, they were using us to not just, like, beef up their skills, but we're, like, launching a program. So we're making stuff up kind of a lot in the last minute, contingency planning. But it worked out well. It was an amazing experience. The people there were incredible. Still connected with quite a few of them there. And hopefully, once I finish this PhD, I'll be heading back down there to do a little bit more help. We're doing some stuff with a couple other countries in Kenya through Baylor. But a wild opportunity to meet, like, the national track and field team. Like, so, yeah. Like, their whole approach to life with the Kenyan people is just, like, awesome. Like, so I have friends who have been, involved in the Olympic and national teams. I have friends who've done, different things from the PT sports medicine side. And, like, to get invited to a camp is a pretty big deal. You just to observe, and to watch a practice. But if it's ever, like, during a games or a camp for games, like, good luck. Like, you're not, they don't want anyone there who's not, like, that has a reason to be there. Like, no guests.
Yeah.
So, like, I got, while I was there, Jessica Shiraku, who is the department head, the PT department there, is also the head physiotherapist for the national track and field team. Like, do you want to go, like, watch them run? I was like, and train? I was like, yeah. This is, like, they brought me over there, right? Obviously they had vetted me because they knew who I was, but get my credentials. I'm like, they're preparing for like the African championship, African games, like the continental championship.
Yes.
And, like, they're in a pretty serious camp. And I'm here's just me walking in there. Like, I'm like, can I take pictures? Like, oh yeah, go ahead. Super casual. And just like, man, night and day between what you would see in the United States. And just like, they came up, like, you want to like, you know, introduce me to these different Olympic champions, world champions, like, awesome. Like, the people there are just like super cool. Great, great country, great people. And like, just like an incredible experience. And that was just like one of those experiences, man. Like, it was just an awesome trip. Awesome trip. I can't speak highly, more highly than the Nairobi Hospital. Excellent team.
That's awesome.
Yeah. With Martin, all came through social media.
How like, cool is that, man?
So like people knock it, but like if you use it for the right ways and for a tool, like as a tool, way that connection would have been established without social media, right? So just yeah, it's awesome.
So cool. And Martin is at Kenyan Physio on Instagram, I believe, right?
Yeah. He's doing some amazing things. So he's also kind of brought to my, and I actually owe him, like he's sold a few papers he needs to get access to. Some people don't think understand, like PT exists outside of the United States and the Western world, where we have, you know, limitless access to information, libraries and stuff, like internet access even. You know, in certain parts of the world where there are our brothers and sisters in PT, they don't. And like getting access to information is critical. So social media has been a nice, you know, medium for them to get resources. So, you know, Martin's a classic example of that. Use a lot of social media connections to, you know, get information, get good speakers and consultants to help out with his country, which he's incredibly passionate about helping. And that guy should go into politics. That guy is going to be, the guy's a leader. Awesome guy. But yeah, to get information and democratize information to people who don't have resources, because just, you know, they don't have them in their country. And yeah, social media has been great for that, for certain parts of the world.
That's awesome. So where Tyler and Trace, where do you think you're going to be speaking in a few years when we really know how to utilize social media after, you know, you're going to be consulting maybe, some veteran care, some McKenzie, how to do McKenzie treatment on a veteran care, Trace. Tyler's going to be, you know, hosting his hip hop freestyle seminars all across the country.
There you go, man.
Las Vegas.
That's where you want to hold your courses, right?
That's right.
Connections in Vegas.
Right? Made so many connections, man. Vegas is huge.
Hell yeah. Do y'all have any dreams for academia or research? Like what's y'all's game plan for the future? We can't do much treating of patients right now. So what are y'all thinking for the future?
I'm thinking like trying to get into management and work that way, honestly, like trying to, which means I'm going to probably have to get better at policy, but I think seeing the VA system and how large of an impact we can make the higher up you get, it's like you're seeing the federal government now unleash its weapons in time of, you know, a pandemic. It's like, oh, we don't have the money for this, except if we really need it, hold on, here's $1.5 trillion. Yeah, we got some money. It's like, and I see that happen at the VA where it's like, oh, well, we can't get TheraBand. Oh, but there's a veteran who just lost his limb, but he's 400 pounds and we don't have bariatric parallel bars. 2 days later, we get a fresh set of bariatric parallel bars. It's like, so the higher up you get, the more influence you can have. And I really do enjoy working with the veteran population. So trying to improve that system as much as I can is kind of a goal in terms of PT in that realm. Besides, like outside of any side hustle, but if we're talking travel, if I can get anyone to pay me to travel anywhere and talk about anything, all for it. Like I would love to be able to, like your trip to Kenya, I will never have, you know, the cardio poem background that you have to be able to do something like that, but you know, heck, if they want me to just go down to Austin and talk and they'll pay for it, like that's cool. Like
yeah, you bring up a great point too. Like I did my residency in the VA system, and like yeah, it's, I always tell people, man, like that's probably like one, the best place to do a residency program if you do one, because like your benefits working the federal system are best, like they're mm-hmm. best. There's no doubt about it, no debate. And the not having to deal with insurance is pretty awesome, right? Patients are pretty awesome too. Like, just great, great, you know, the commiseration you see between vets is just awesome. There's a bond there that I don't think people like ever really understand unless you're a veteran. The other side is, whenever we needed something, it's just nice. Like I needed this walker. I needed this equipment. It was just, you know, a matter of time versus like, you know, yeah, not happening.
That's like in the CLC that I'm working in right now, which is like our skilled nursing facility. Yeah, we discharged a guy and the only thing we were waiting on was we were adapting his truck. So we wanted to make sure he can get in and out of his truck without like being able to transfer from a manual chair, and then made sure that he could have a lift in the back of his truck for his power chair. Like, yeah, you're not going to do that in the private sector.
Yeah, I mean, trying to do that in the private sector, like, not possible.
Yeah, right? And it wasn't like, the only issue was we had to make sure his truck can handle it. Like, no one was worried about the money. It was like, write up what your needs are. We'll meet with the rep and we'll get it done. Yeah. So it's not a system I want to get out of. If I'm going to continue to do PT, I couldn't imagine going into work and being like, you're going to see 25 patients today because money. And yeah, you have to write all your notes, and we're not going to pay you to write your notes. It's like, nah.
Yeah, I saw people like, yeah, people. And so that's why you see people who work in the VA system, like, don't leave generally. Mm-hmm. Like, if they're hired, you know, permanent staff, like, they're there for like 20, 30 years. Cause it's just like, why would you leave that system unless you had, like, you know, you had to for whatever reason,
maybe your family
moving, but if you can stay in it, stay in it. It's awesome.
That was the goal out of PT school, was to, I was hoping one day to get into the VA system, and then got into it because of a scholarship right out of school, and don't have any intention on leaving. It's like, I'm in one of the places that'll be able to give a pension in 20 years.
The benefits are unprecedented. So all those listening, man, like the VA system, like, it's probably, and your autonomy as a PT, the VA system is pretty, a little bit better than at UT elsewhere. You get to make some, because realize, like, the VA systems really are run, like, there are not many like staff physicians in VAs. It's, you know, a lot of NPs, PAs, and PTs and pharmacists have an elevated role there just because, like, you know, they out of necessity. So you get a good bit of autonomy in that system too.
Yeah, we interviewed a guy on here, I think, that he is a PT at the VA and he has a surfing clinic for vets.
That's awesome.
Combat PTSD.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's like, if you can do pretty much whatever you want to, as long as you have the backing from upper level management.
Cool stuff, man.
Yeah, Trace is going to change the game and change the culture up there for sure. Just might take 10 years, but it's going to happen. And speaking of changing the game, I'd love to pick your brain, Rich, on how you create such an engaging and interactive online community regarding education for students.
Yeah, you know, I've been fortunate because not many people are, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn here too much, but I mean, I have the award right behind me, right? I have one for, you know, my educator excellence in education, students in-person education. So, and being able to do both, you know, hybrid and traditional teaching, usually, you know, you're good at one or the other, right? So it's hard to be good at both. So I liken it that I have, you know, an affinity for technology. I've always grown up playing and tinkering with computers. And, you know, I always say in jest, you know, managing a live lecture, you know, I was perfectly prepared for, from my years playing StarCraft with my friends, like managing a chat bar and doing something that requires
there
a high
go.
Copy. I mean, just that. I mean, I find that I have a pretty good understanding. So if you're passionate about what you do and you're knowledgeable, your teaching usually comes pretty well. Like, you know what you're talking about and you care about what you're talking about. Teaching's teaching. You know, the online model can be kind of tough because, you know, but with growing up, like, around technology, it's engaging through technology platforms or communication platforms. Like, I'm just more comfortable doing this stuff, right? So, because I do it every day, right? And I go, you know, I obviously oversee from the largest groups for PDs, so that's just stuff I do on the regular. In terms of like tips, it's just like, I think by the live sessions, I think I do a pretty good job from my students of bringing things together and really focusing on key points, because it can get kind of tough to kind of, you know, especially from the student perspective, connected. But we do a pretty good job at Baylor, I think, of knowing that they're supported and that creating a classroom environment, even though we're not in a physical classroom.
Yeah, I know that was because Tyler and I graduated from a flex program. I know that was one of the big struggles is when there is a course where most of the courses online are such a heavy online component, you kind of feel like it's a self-taught scenario.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, though, like even a traditional program, like you should be doing a lot of your own. I even tell my students at UIC when we're in a traditional program, like, look, we could spend 6 hours a week on this one technique. Like, realistically, what's going to get you to mastery is what you do in your own time. Like, you know, you don't expect to only be doing your learning in class because the graduate school, that's why we don't recommend you guys working because your full-time job is school. So there is going to be self-learning. There should be self-learning at any level, whether it's a hybrid flex program or a traditional program.
Sure. What's your big takeaways, Tyler, now being a year going on 2 years removed from a flex program? Any thoughts lingering in your head?
In general, I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm just like in a rut, but I do feel like maybe this is just our program, but I do feel like I've seen some new grads come the company that we worked for and I work for still, and I feel like they're pretty prepared, more prepared than we are coming out. So in terms of that, but I love what Rich just said though. Like it's really, I could put that on the program or I could put it on my, you really, if you want to be when you have a doctor, when you have a doctor in front of your name, you can't ever really throw that on someone else. Right. You like, it's ultimately like, hey, you're an adult. Like you should have figured it out.
Yeah. And realistically that like dedication to self-motivation to learning is a skill you're going to need your entire career. Cause like no one's going to be spoon feeding information when you get into practice. One, you're going to be expected to know what you're doing and to like continually evolve, right? Clinical practice is called practice for a reason. Like you're constantly, going through this iterative process of evolution, and how you go about managing patients.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, right? What I might have, when you get out in the field, it's going to be there. No one's going to be there teaching it then. So if you can't do it, in PT school, then guess what? Nothing's going to change when you get out on your own. And that's when things, get really funky because someone's, not life is in your hands, but that's someone else that you have to help out.
Well, if they have the virus, their life might be in your hands a little bit.
You say livelihood, maybe not life, but livelihood. And that's a really
livelihood.
About, right? So,
yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Man, I think the biggest story that I saw from you, Rich, this week is that you're having an opportunity to write or co-author a chapter in the differential diagnosis book for physical therapists.
Yeah, this is wild, man. Honestly, like this is also, again, one of those like surreal moments. I'm like, I grew up in a row home in Philadelphia with a family of there were six of us in that house.
Born and raised.
West Philadelphia, too. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Actually, I knew people who knew Will Smith growing up. Kind of wild, too. But I didn't play basketball, though. But I didn't hang on the playground. So
you're like if Will Smith played rugby.
Maybe. I grew up pretty humble means, man. Like I remember like growing up and like not being able to go to like wrestling camp, right? Like because we couldn't afford it. So to like be one in a PT program, have success, travel the world doing stuff, and then like a book that pretty much every program uses, right? Like I mean, you say Goodman and Snyder, people like they get it, right? It's like the the Kendall book, right? Or McGee, one of the strength guy, or Cook. Right, like those are like seminal textbooks in our profession. Yeah. That I literally use as a student. I think our differential diagnosis course was in our second year, 9 years ago. That came about from a colleague of mine here at Baylor, Brian Young, who's tasked with helping update Chapter 4 on medical screening and physical assessment. he'd asked me about some of my thoughts because I've obviously done a lot with the Vitals for Vitals campaign. We have a couple papers coming out on that, one that's been out already. And, you know, we have this decision tree, which we're going to be publishing and just like talking about it. And I was like, hey, like, you know, would you be up for me helping out with this chapter? And we talk it over with the editors. And they're like, yeah, we'd be love to have you on there for your expertise. So it's a good group for this chapter as well. It's people I've worked with before. John Hayek is on there. He's awesome down in up in Northern Arizona or down in Northern Arizona. And of course, Brian Young, the legend in his own right. So yeah, it's just wild. Like, I mean, I had revised a textbook chapter, helped go through revision, wasn't an author on it in the most recent De Turk Hanlon book, which is another big one in CardioPulm. And then I wrote my own first textbook chapter as a first author, but that was more like a science-based textbook on respiratory muscle performance and obesity. So like, you know, I helped revise one, wasn't an author, but was like acknowledged. And then, I didn't really help. Like, I helped like revise. I didn't write, do too much with the writing. There were legends though, like Jerry Dempsey and Bart Morgan, like super grateful for that experience. So I got like a little bit of experience with that. Then writing my first one. But that was in, like a science book. A lot of people in my profession probably aren't going to read unless they know me. But to be in this book as an author is just wild. Like, cause
everybody's gonna read this one.
Everyone's gonna read that book. So it's just, and we're going to put our decision tree in that book too for blood pressure management. So like that's just kind of cool too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't even remember by now how many times I've said vitals are vital to people.
Good.
Like, yeah, patients.
That's always the goal of the campaign, man. So when we started out with this, it was like myself, Kyle Ridgway, and I came up with the slogan in the campaign. And like Kyle Ridgway, myself, and Matt Lee, and like Ben Fung was also there helping to like promote it with us, with a few other people. But like, you know, looking back where that campaign was, where the state of the profession was 5 years ago, to where it is now, but I think a lot of students and like new grads, like it's just something that they do. And yeah, like, you know, again, it goes back to that we talked about at the very beginning, you know, my not inability to have my lack of fear of speaking out about things. Like I felt was a big problem. I'm going to speak my mind about it. I'm going to come ready. I'm going to come correct. Right.
West Philly.
Just, you know, keep kind of beating the drum here. And it's been picked up by, you know, some pretty high level people, prehab guys, put stuff out for it, a bunch of other people. And now it's just like something that like people do. We have resources. Like we had, you know, multiple success. We raised $1,000 for a t-shirt sale and a short sale. Like, I mean, it's been a self-sustaining program. Like it's just, yeah, it's wild, man. Like that campaign. And now like people recognize it. Like it's one of the more recognizable, I think, campaigns in our profession that started kind of like while I was in residency in Chicago. Like just from what I saw from treating patients and even in an orthopedic clinic, like these people all have diabetes. They all have hypertension, like all are obese. Like, why aren't we taking blood pressure? I was doing this in the VA in Wisconsin. Obviously, it's a cardiac pulmonary rehab program, but you know, those patients weren't much different. And then diving into the research and all this stuff. So it's just been, yeah, it's been awesome. So we're really excited. There is a paper that got accepted to be published in PTJ. We're going to hopefully scrounge up some money to make it open access for you guys, for everybody. But sweet. Myself, Sarah Arena, who's also published a lot in this field, Shane Phillips, who's my PhD mentor, vascular biologist, PT, super smart guy, Ahmad Sabahi, and Ali Abarati. I think we're probably the five biggest people in PT doing this stuff. And that'll be out probably in the next month for PTs. So yeah,
thank you, man. Nerdy question, nerdy research question here for you. You said you're going to scrounge up some money to make it open access. How does that work? How much money is needed to make a paper open access?
Yeah, let me poll you guys. How much money do you think it costs to make a paper free for everyone to use? Published paper.
A little Price is Right game here. Okay. I'm going to say $500.
Higher.
Okay.
Oh.
My next step to guess.
I should have given you we're doing Price is Right. I shouldn't have given you
say. 501.
Dang it.
I think it's got to be at least $5,000.
Depends on the journal. So you're over. PTJ for non-members is $3,000.
Whoo!
And if you're a member, it's $2,000. Fortunately, which is, it saves you $1,000. You know, I mean, really, I mean, if you're an APTA member, obviously that's free. And you know, depending on the embargo, you know, when that's lifted, maybe a year later, some of these things become free. But it's expensive. So I don't think people realize when they're like super critical of researchers, like, you know, like, you know, an access, like, where I'm not seeing any of that money, like, I'm paying to make this work accessible to you.
Dang.
So the, you know, UIC for students, right, you know, you can get like $1,000 covered or half covered. So, but, you know, we'll figure out how we'll cover the rest of that. Because I want to make, my big thing is, like, information should not be hidden behind paywalls, especially stuff that I think is important. And, you know, this campaign, especially the Vitals of Vitals campaign, was something that has, you know, the research we've done has been supported by members of the profession. And, you know, it's really kind of been something that's been taken up by the profession. It wouldn't be right, in my mind, to now create a resource and make that, you know, have a paywall. That wouldn't be right. I get asked all the time, what do you do? I'm like, just wait, the paper coming. How could I, with a good conscience, right? And there's also with the oath of the PT, we should be giving away our resources freely to a certain degree. How could I make that, you know, how could I create a barrier there if I was able to remove it? So, right, what's the passage in the Bible where, like, give lavishly, right? Be lavish with generosity, same kind of concept.
Well, thank you. I'll never look at another research paper the same now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's going to be a change in the next few years because, like, universities are getting fed up with it because, you know, it's expensive to publish, and sometimes, again, in big paper, big journals. That's, you know, but I mean, typically just to publish a paper, it's free. Usually if you have a partnership with that publisher, if your school, but open access is where things get a little bit pricey. Yeah, making things open access.
Got it. Now I learned so much in this hour, Trace and Tyler, man. How are y'all feeling? Do we hit the nails on the head? Do we touch all the bases? We talked about 311. I'm good now. I can sleep happy.
I still have to go listen to a song by 311, and then I'll be able to go to bed happy.
Okay.
I got one last COVID question for you, though. Because this is something that weighed heavy on me, is we're, you know, in the SNF setting, and we're talking about treating patients and all of that. And for me personally, I have an internal debate of, if they make me wear this N95 respirator, I'm going to have to shave my beard of the last like 4 years. How would you feel if you had to get fitted for an N95? Could you shave that beard to treat your patients?
We get fitted for N95s at our hospital system anyway, so you have to trim it down.
I thought I had to go clean shaven completely.
I'm not shaving my beard. So. I mean, that's just that. I'm not shaving it. So I like it. And I've had this one now for almost 6 years, so it's not much shaving for anybody.
It's nice, man.
It's a good. I mean, it's funny because I grew up like not being a big fan of. I like my beard, and I think it's a good look on most people. I think most people can grow one. I think that's not a big myth. People, I can't grow a good beard. Like, I couldn't grow a good beard the first time I grew one. Like, it's just time and patience, man.
Are you using like beard oils and stuff? Is it?
I do. So I've got a whole routine. I actually use, it's called Viking Revolution. It's their, they have a beard shampoo and beard conditioner. So I do that every morning, shampoo, conditioner.
Yeah.
There's an article that came out like a couple of years ago about like the germs are on beards. I'm like, it's only on people who like are nasty, who don't like take care of this. Cause if people saw how much care I put into like keeping my beard clean, like probably cleaner than most people's faces. But yeah, the routine, shampoo, conditioner, I have a separate brush and comb. It's a wood comb and then like a separate brush, and then comb down oil, beard oil, and then I brush it in, and then I carry around wipes after I eat to keep it clean.
Beard wipes. Wow. That's next level.
Not even beard wipes. It's just like, you know, disposable wipes, like nothing super. They probably make them though. Like I may look into that.
If they don't, you should patent that.
You should patent that.
Totally. Yeah. Vital wipes.
Vital wipes. Ooh.
That's right.
That's good, actually. That's good. But yeah, so that's the routine. It's taken a lot of trial and error, man. Like, cause really people realize, like, if you got the wrong pH or whatever chemical constitutes of your shampoo, like, you dry beard skin is the worst feeling in the world. It is like probably maybe not the worst. It's one of the worst feelings. having that right balance. Like I people may think it's weird, but like, dude, beard shampoo and beard conditioner, like, it's a game changer. And yeah. the beard oil.
Yeah. Can you say that name of that company again?
Viking Revolution.
Yeah, they're a sponsor of this show, actually. Yeah, so shout out to Viking Revolution. Thank you.
Hey,
no, I was joking.
Good job, man. You got some great beard.
Thanks, man. I asked that question. We put that on there because I'm trying to grow a beard, a bigger beard too. You know, I think it's the way to go.
Dude, I mean, you're on quarantine anyways, right? So
what else?
Why not? Why not? Yeah.
That's the question. Tyler, you good over there? Tyler's got a great beard too, man. Any final questions on your end?
No. I'm just more beard questions, but that's I'll just go off on my own adventure there.
I mean, honestly, it's got to be trial and error, man. You got to figure out what works best for your skin, your beard. So,
yeah. There you go. Men's grooming, it's a serious topic.
Yeah, dude. Like, well, I mean, people spend all kinds of money for, like, the right shampoo for their hair. Like, it's hair on your face, man, and it's a different skin. Like, you gotta find the right, whatever works for your body. You didn't ask me about college football, man.
Oh, that's right. Is it gonna?
Oh, good. Okay, like, I asked you, what we had asked you on the podcast. I was waiting for the college football talk, man. I mean, I can make it short. Penn State's gonna go 15-0.
Really?
Yep.
Because yep. No other teams are gonna play.
Ohio
is that?
State.
Because
no other teams.
I think you're gonna see the full James Franklin arsenal, what he's been trying to build for the past now 6 years on display. That offense is gonna be, and then the defense is gonna be nasty. You got studs at linebacker, studs at defensive end, the D line, which are critical. You look at every national champion, right? It's good linebacker play, great defensive line play. And offensively, you've got we obviously lost KJ Handler, but a bunch of other studs and wide receiver ready to step up. Probably the best tight end in college football in Pat Freiermuth. And then the backfield of Noah Kane, Journey Brown, Devin Ford, and they got other guys coming in the wings. You've got Sean Clifford, who people forget was a sophomore, like his first year starting, had an amazing year. Minnesota is not going to be as good as they were last year. That's a once-in-a-generation team. The boat has sunk. It's done. We rode that boat off. And then Ohio State is going to be coming to Penn State. So the Big Ten East has come through pretty much. It's been, three to one in the past few years, but they've been decided within a point. I mean, people say Ohio State, Michigan's a big rivalry, and that may be true historically, but there is no other team in probably the Big Ten, at least for Ohio State, they fear more. And I'm talking to their fans, is playing Penn State and is playing at Penn State, because someone who went there, 110,000 people, and that's going to be a whiteout game. You know that's going to be the case. That is it's not even all this world. It's ridiculous. It's deafening. It creates earthquakes. It's gonna be 15-0 on it right now.
15-0, cool.
Just
man.
Overlooking the Fighting Illini, my alma mater.
Let's look.
Haters.
Because the other big thing is they're gonna start. Maybe they go 14-1. But they're winning the national championship. Or at the very least, they'll be in the top. They'll be in the playoff.
Yeah, and then my Tigers are gonna beat them.
Clemson?
No, the real Tiger.
Real Tiger.
Tiger. Bayou Bengals.
Princeton? That's the real Tiger.
No. Try again.
I'm messing. No. But, no, I mean, LSU is going to have a major step back.
We only step forward.
Only step forward. Keep thinking that. Keep thinking that. I mean, amazing. One of the best single seasons in
college. It was a fun time, man.
So let's go down the list. Kent State, that's a win.
Okay.
At Virginia Tech, that might be a tough game, second week of the season. That's a win. San Diego State, that's a win. That's at home. Northwestern, that's at home. That's a win. Toughest game probably of the year at Michigan. We'll see how this is Jim Harbaugh's like, got to put it together.
Yeah.
You can't keep, I mean, Michigan fans are Michigan fans. Like, it's going to be a big game. We'll win that game though.
What month is that going to be? What's the date?
It's October.
Okay.
Iowa always gives me nightmares, but we've had their number. James Franklin, I don't think has not lost to them. Beat them every single time they played. That's a win. Ohio State, we'll see how this one goes, but again, it's really favored the home team. And Penn State, even with a roster that's not really at where Ohio State is recruiting-wise, that's what ultimately, that's 80% of college football recruiting. Now they're kind of equal. That talent's now had years to kind of cycle through and build depth, and they're playing at home. That's a win. It's a win.
That's a win.
At Indiana, that's a win. Nebraska, I mean, Scott Frost, great story, but should have stayed in Western Michigan. That's a win. Michigan State, that program's in shambles. It's in shambles right now. That's a win. Versus Maryland, come on. that's a home, too. That's a win. And at Rutgers, the only thing getting chopped, even though Greg Schiano is back, is Rutgers. They're getting chopped up all over the place. That's a win. So,
they're going to be on the
regular season undefeated. They're going to start the season probably like 5-ish, maybe number 10-ish, yeah. 5-10. Some team ahead of them, a few teams are going to lose, you know. That Ohio State win is going to be huge. And then who's going to be on the other side in the Big Ten West, right? They've already beaten Iowa. Iowa's never beaten them since Franklin's been coach. Even when they were just came off sanctions, like they've never beaten them. Or at least a 4-0, right? Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
probably not, right? Or Minnesota. Like, there's no one in the Big Ten West. So that's a win, the championship game. Whoever's going to come out of the East is going to win the Big Ten, as they have the past few years. So, like, I mean, just looking at the schedule, like, if they play to their ability, they should go undefeated, at least make it to the college football playoff. So people laughed at me like, look, man, they were a couple plays away from going this past year. I'm telling you,
it's a solid argument.
I mean, if I didn't do what I do now, I'd have done a PhD in sport history. Like I nerd out over college football and every sport. But yeah, I'm telling you right now, like Penn State, people should be afraid of them. Like they got some weapons, man. We'll see.
Is there any risk that the season will be postponed? In your mind right now.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. Yeah. That's why would we talk about it on the perfect setup of Penn State?
That's what gets me through the gold. Okay. Man, if we don't have football, we're gonna have some problems.
Yeah.
We have some problems. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And on that note, thank you, Rich, for your time. Go Penn State. Do you have a chant? What's y'all's chant?
We are, man. We are Penn State.
We are. There we go.
Penn State. Yeah.
I feel like I'm.
Yeah, so one person says we are, and then it's followed up. It's actually a really interesting story. First African-American, I think, to play Cotton Bowl as well. And this is, like, back in the 50s, like, back in, like, before, you know, I think people were, like, integrated, teams were allowed to be integrated. And Penn State running back. Penn State, there's a gentleman's rule that – if you play teams that were not desegregated, the African American players would sit. So what happened? Penn State was supposed to play in a bowl game against Miami, and like they were like, "Hey, it's in a meeting." Decided so Penn State like did not play. We're not going to play against Miami. We're not sitting in the play. It's 1948 Cotton Bowl. Penn State was playing SMU, Southern Methodist. And same thing, you know, Southern Methodist is in Texas, Cotton Bowl's in the South. So the rules were like, if you played a team from the South in the South, you would sit your black players. Penn State, Joe Tsui, who was the captain, said, you know, enough with these meetings. We're Penn State. There'll be no more meetings. You'll play with all of us or none of us. Wow. And that was the end of that. So they went down and played. And they actually, Wally Triplett scored the game tying touchdown, 13-13 tie. And that game kind of really helped set the stage for integration of African-Americans or integration of sports. This is 1948, well before the Civil Rights Movement. So Penn State, I know they've had some disappointing things happen there, and awful things happen there. But if you look throughout their history, whether it's women's sports, women's participation in sports, like my grandmother was playing sports at Penn State back in the early 50s. Like, they've been a leader in being on the right side of history for a lot of things. And that story that, you know, we're Penn State, there'll be no more meetings, eventually became this chant. We are, it's, you know, so it's that chant comes from that story. And so it has a very special meaning to the school that we're all, you know, we're all one body of the university. And it goes back to that pretty heroic story.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And very fitting for this time right now.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely.
We are.
Penn State.
Thank you so much, Rich.
No worries. No, thanks, guys. It's been awesome.
Good luck to you. Have fun writing this evening, man.
Yeah. We'll see how much I get done. Goal is to get it done by Friday, but we'll see how that goes.
You got it. You got nothing else to do.
That's correct. Exam tomorrow, but it's remotely and already uploaded. So.
Sweet. All right, man. Peace.
Hey, take care, guys. Thanks so much. It's been an awesome time.
Thank you.